When you think of cactus, you might think of deserts, but some cacti are native to Illinois. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert Patrick Murphy from Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum. Patrick, thanks for stopping by for another edition of Grow.
Good to be with you, Mike.
So what kind of cactus is found in Illinois and even in central Illinois?
Prickly pear cactus is the one that we can say fits into both of those categories, and it represents about a dozen species of Apuntia. I love that term, Apuntia genus of cactus and the Cactaceae family. These populate North American deserts, and all of them have a very similar appearance with a flat, fleshy pad that look like large leaves, but they're actually modified branch and stem structures, and they serve the functions of water storage, of course, photosynthesis. They produce flowers. They're an overlooked treasure, I think. Mm. They're a solution to a lot of gardeners' difficult scenarios as well.
If a landscaper or a gardener, a home gardener, wanted to put these into the landscape, there is a way to do that.
Yeah, they're very easy to transplant, and you can just take a little slice of a pad and put it down in a narrow furrow in the ground and give it some water. But it is a plant that likes fast draining, usually rocky, gravelly, or sandy type soils. So if you had a boulevard and you're having trouble getting grass to grow there, that would be a possibility for one to consider, and they could amend the soil simply by adding pea gravel or sand.
So how do they fit into the ecosystem, for instance? Do they add anything back to the soil in some way, or are they a food source for other animals or insects?
They are a food source for a few animals. They are a habitat for lots of small animals, and they're oftentimes found in areas where there's not a lot of other things growing, or there's a really predetermined company that comes with it, but they don't restore or enrich soils like, say, a legume might do. They might, in some cases, because of where they would be located, that's a south and west exposure where that's the hot and sunniest, they could be a natural barrier to some plants to protect them against foraging and stuff. So if there are grasses or other plants that are growing inside these cacti, that's a possibility because that's how they're mixed in nature. There's some protection afforded to those other plants that are mixed within them.
So they protect the plants, and then any animals like field mice or something might use that as a natural habitat,
yeah,
because
exactly.
Other animals can't get to them because of the spines of the cactus.
Right, reptiles. Yeah, excellent.
How does the abundance of water in central Illinois, especially during the spring, affect these cacti? I've killed many succulents and cacti by overwatering them.
It's certainly a possibility, and if it's in a spot that's not well draining, you know, because that's what you get with sandy, rocky, gravelly type soils, it could be in a spot where it's retaining water. That's something that you may be able to fix. Or it could be an indication that it's not really the perfect plant for that spot, you know?
I'm always surprised when I come across cactus in Illinois. I guess I shouldn't be, but I'm always, you know, when I'm hiking and I see a cactus, it's always something sort of special, I guess, because they stand out, and those yellow flowers stand out as well on the prickly pear. But they are fairly common, and they're found in a lot of other states as well.
They have a character that's different from many other plants. They're found in all the deserts of the American Southwest, and based on having adapted to local elevations and ranges, that's when you see their other 15 or so species that go with the prickly pear that we see here in Illinois. In Illinois, for that matter, Mike, it's down in there's some sandy flat kind of alluvial areas along the river in southwest Illinois. That's where you would go and see them in large numbers, kind of mixed in with some grasses and probably some other pines and cottonwoods and things like that.
I think it's interesting how plants can help people. Obviously, we consume or eat some of them, but we're also finding all kinds of compounds in plants in the rainforests, for instance, that have medical applications. And the prickly pear right here in central Illinois might also have similar benefits.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of the spirit of what I wanted to talk with you about the prickly pear, was because there has been interest in the prickly pear plant. Lots of cultures have eaten this plant, and some have realized a lowering of their blood glucose levels based on this water-soluble fiber that comes with ingesting properly prepared prickly pear cactus pads. But like a lot of other things we've talked about, there's really no 100% conclusive AMA, you know, backed evidence to suggest that it happens. It's more on anecdotal side. But even if that wasn't your goal, it's tasty. It's good to eat, and it's something that is, I think, I find interesting because I think edible landscapes are not only fashionable, but they make a lot of sense.
Well, let's talk about eating them. In the old westerns, you'd see characters dig into a cactus for the moisture content, but you can actually just eat these or prepare them in a recipe. And I guess I'd start off by asking you, what does it taste like?
Well, to me, it's,
and don't say chicken.
No, it doesn't. To me, it tastes like a combination of, say, like a mango and a little of asparagus.
Huh.
Don't know if it makes your pee smell funny. I haven't eaten that much of it.
That's a whole nother edition.
That's
of
right.
We can talk about the compounds in asparagus and related plants that would make that can give urine a smell.
Yeah, and that's why asparagus is so insecure, I think, is from that funny smell.
I love asparagus.
Yeah. There's a part of the pear that's actually a flower that's kind of a purpley pinkish color. It's like looks like a large grape. That's considered a fruit, where the meat that you get from the prepared pad is considered a vegetable.
Hmm.
And then the pear has a heart, you know, kind of like, you know, an artichoke has a heart. And these are all the parts of the pear that one can consume.
So why is the fruit of the prickly pear sometimes called tuna? I assume it doesn't have any relationship to the flavor of tuna.
I don't know. I'm not sure. And that's the best I can do. That's just the lingo.
That's just weird.
That.
So what about are they protected? Can you harvest them in the wild? You talked about transplanting them. So if I come across one, can I harvest a pad? Leave the plant intact. You know, don't dig up the whole plant for one pad, but
yeah,
harvest a pad and prepare it as I'm hiking or camping.
I think one could if they were on private property. We have to remind everybody that it's illegal in most cases and discouraged to leave or take anything from a state, federal, or county park. But you could easily forage on this, you know. So if you're hiking in Flagstaff, Arizona, and, you know, enjoying all the pinyon pines and all that nature has to offer there, if one was able to enjoy some prickly pear cactus around the campfire without, you know, injuring themselves, I think that would be fine. I think it's taking it out of there that you might get in trouble, right?
But if it's on private property and you wanted to transplant one to your yard, you could probably successfully do that.
Absolutely.
What's the root structure like?
Shallow? Root structure is small, shallow, like human hair, usually confined within whatever shadow the cactus casts on the ground. It's not a long-running root system like with a woody plant. Or even a herbaceous plant, it's kind of confined.
And let's talk about actually handling these when you're transplanting
right.
or wanting to prepare them to eat. You use a phrase called, glauca? So are those the spines?
They are, and some of them are tiny that you can barely even see them. And then, you know, this is another reason that like foxes and coyotes and a smart domestic dog would keep away from them is because they can be pushed into your flesh really easy.
So it's not the big spines you have to worry about, although those will hurt, but it's the little ones that will work in like a splinter maybe.
That's right. And but when you're outside transplanting, you're definitely going to want to have leather gloves, and maybe you want a tong. So you can hold that little leaf up so you're kind of burying the cut portion of the pad in the earth.
If you have any questions about gardening or cactus, we might answer them on an upcoming episode of Grow. I'm Mike McCurdy with Patrick Murphy. Send your gardening questions to wglt.org/grow.